Hi, everybody. Steve Savitsky, and welcome back to Savitsky Talks. And today we have Rabbi Chaim Loike. Rabbi Loike is the rabbinic coordinator at the Orthodox Union with very special interest. Rabbi Loike, how are you today?
Baruch Hashem, thank you so much.
Well, that's really great. I know that we've got a very interesting article coming up in the Jewish Action, a quacky visitor at the OU. That sounds like a lot of, there could be a lot of people like that, but I know it's not one of the people who are the RCs, right?
Correct.
That's good. That's good to hear that. So first of all, let's talk about what the Torah tells us about birds. I mean, unlike other animals and so on, where they tell you what you have to do, what you can't do, the Torah is a little different when it comes to birds. So let's explain that to the viewing audience, listening audience.
In Sefer Vayikra, the 11th chapter, and in Sefer Devarim, the 14th chapter, there are two lists of birds which are not kosher. Any bird on the not kosher list is obviously not kosher. Birds related to the birds that are not kosher are not kosher, but all other birds are going to be kosher. So technically speaking, if somebody could identify all the birds listed in Devarim and Vayikra, they would be able to eat any bird not on that list. Unfortunately, we are not able to identify the birds on these lists. So as a result, what we have to do to definitively establish a bird as kosher, we have to know that that bird was accepted as kosher since the time, either in the time of the Rishonim or the time of the Gemara, depending on the view of Rashi or Tosfos, that the bird was accepted as kosher by the Jewish people at that time. So
how do we know that, what do we have, what information do we have to show that a particular bird was used during that period of time?
We have very little information. And that's why there are so few species of birds which we accept as kosher.
Okay, well, let's just start from the beginning. Which ones do we accept?
We accept duck, chicken, sparrows, pigeons, turtle doves, quail, partridges, a few other species. Turkeys, we're not sure why, but somehow they made it on the list.
Okay, right. There's a whole big story about turkey, right?
Okay. Yes.
And there are some people who don't eat turkey, right?
Correct.
Okay. Do you, by the way?
Yes, I eat turkey.
Okay, good. Just curious. As we're getting closer to Thanksgiving, I was figuring I'd ask you that question. So you eat turkey. What else besides those? Any others?
I mean, it's not a very long list.
Okay. And when you say also that, either that bird or some species related, what does that mean?
That means, for example, if you were zeicher to go to Israel and you took a look at the raven, everybody agrees the raven is a non-kosher bird, but the species of raven that you would find in Israel, which has a gray cap to it and is a little bit different in size, and there are a few differences between the raven found in Israel and the raven or the crow that you would find in America. Now, even though these are not the same species, since they're related species, they're both considered to be on that prohibited list because the Torah says the orev is forbidden, and then let me know its associated species are also forbidden.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I know that, we've had at the OU, we've had those special days when, we had the Masorah, and, I actually went to two of them. I went to one in New York and I went to one in L.A., so I had the great privilege of eating some things that I have never eaten before in my life. What were some of the exotic things that we actually served in the restaurants those times?
So we had a bunch of firsts. One of the first things that we had, at least to our knowledge, slaughtered in America were sparrows.
Sparrows, right.
Those had never been consumed before. There were a lot of other birds which had been known to be kosher, quail, partridges, but it wasn't widely known by the greater community. So those were, eye-openers, but some people had previously slaughtered them in America, but the sparrow, is not indigenous to America. It was only brought to America in the late 1800s, and we have no record of anyone ever eating sparrow in American soil until the Masorah dinner. And, of course, the sparrow is clearly accepted as kosher by almost all the communities of Europe.
Really? Now, I know that they've gone back also to, I know that with Rabbi Zivotofsky,
yes,
they've gone back and they've tried to go back to some of the countries in the Middle East to find out what the Masorah was. And I've watched some of the footage of, documents they put together and so on. Very interesting, very fascinating.
Right. And what Rabbi Zvitovsky and Rabbi Greenspan do is they do a phenomenal job of documenting these isolated communities which have traditions on specific birds that they were accepted as kosher since the time of the Rishonim. And they do an excellent job. Unfortunately, a lot of the birds that we can prove scientifically were kosher, and there might be one or two small communities that accept them as kosher, the greater Jewish community has lost the knowledge as to the identity of these birds. And the OU policy, as you know, is we want to be acceptable to everybody. So even though there are many, many species which we could scientifically and historically prove as kosher, unless they were accepted as kosher by the greater Jewish community and can be attested to as such by Ashkenaz, Sfard, you know, the greater community, the OU won't certify them. But for other mitzvahs like Shluach HaKan, we advise people if they have the opportunity to do Shluach HaKan with these birds, because they're certainly kosher, but we feel that as far as our certification, we want to be, you know, accepted to everyone, and we don't want to just, you know, accept things that were certainly kosher, but there were some communities which, you know, for whatever reason didn't eat them.
So in the Shluach HaKan, which birds are acceptable to do that with? What is the Torah? The Torah specifies which one.
Right. Any bird that's kosher, you can do Shluach HaKan with. You cannot do Shluach HaKan with a non-kosher bird. So, for example, if you have a robin redbreast that nests on your windowsill, the robin redbreast is a thrush. There were many communities in Europe which had a tradition to consume different kinds of thrushes. So there's no question that the robin is a kosher bird, and if you can, you do Shluach HaKan on the robin, but at the same time, when you take the eggs, you do not eat them, because our tradition is to only accept a bird that we have a mesorah is kosher, and there is nobody who has a mesorah that the robin redbreast is kosher, because it's a North American bird.
So even if you're going in the forest, and there you are walking along, and you see the Shluach HaKan, you see that bird, you have to know whether it's a kosher bird or not.
Correct.
Oh boy, putting one more obstacle in that mitzvah, right?
Correct. But when you think of the segulas for accomplishing that mitzvah...
Oh, yeah, no, no question about it. But it's very, very interesting. I didn't know that. So, now, first of all, how did you become, you know, this expert in birds? I mean, what prompted you to do this? Was it on your own or was it through because of the OU?
Well, just for starters, you can imagine how many people are competing with me for the title of kosher bird expert.
I imagine it must be like thousands, right? I mean, thousands, right?
But the reality is, when I was in YU, I was studying Yoredeya and Chulin, and I wanted to do things practically, so I took the YU Shechita class, and at the end of the class, they asked me to teach this class at YU. Mm-hmm. And my first class, I went to the meat market where they sell live birds. It's located on Jerome Avenue in the South Bronx, and I walked into the meat market, and I didn't know which birds were kosher, so I approached Rabbi Ganak. And he was very interested in research. He gave me some funding and said, go to the old Shechtim of Borough Park. You know, they're there. There are many of them. They were there in the, you know, Alter Heim. They were there in Europe. And see what they were accepting as kosher in Europe. So I went with some Chassidish Rabbanim. We basically took boxes full of live birds. And we went to these Shechtim. Most of them were in their 90s. And we just met with them to discuss which birds, we had the birds in front of us, which ones they accepted as kosher, which ones they didn't. And yeah.
Interesting. So now let's get into the domestic duck and this little white, how do you pronounce it, mallards?
Yes, mallard, yeah.
Okay, so what are mallards?
So if you go to any of the parks in New York City, and probably most cities of the world, there are these beautiful ducks. They're dabbling ducks. They stay on the surface. They have a green head. Those are the mallard ducks. Mm-hmm. And there were many communities which accepted the mallard ducks as kosher. There were also a number of communities which did not eat mallard ducks. And as such, some of their rabbanim were hypothesizing that maybe the mallard duck was different than the other duck which was accepted as kosher, which is the common domestic duck, the Peking duck.
Oh, it's called Peking duck, is that what it's called?
Yes. But
that's what they serve in all the restaurants and everything?
Correct, correct.
Okay.
And the Peking duck, everybody accepted as kosher. But on the other hand, the mallard is pretty much, it is the same duck. It's just smaller in the wild form. Mm-hmm. So when we were
Sometimes it shouldn't it be by the concept that we spoke about, which is that which they mention or something similar. So this would be someone similar to this, the duck, correct?
Right. So we'd want to verify that, because just because Rabbi Loike walks in and says, hey, it's the same thing, that's not conclusive. Rabbi Belsky wanted to have everything coordinated in such a way that there was no question that the Peking duck and the mallard duck were the same species. Mm-hmm. So the OU was, interested because we were shechting mallard duck, not on a regular basis, but every so often. And we wanted to show everybody that the mallard duck and the Peking duck were the same. So we looked for a bird which was the perfect bridge between the two. The majority of even the stringent views as to identification of species would allow for one difference, mm-hmm. and the bird could still be the same species. And we found what's called the white mallard. The white mallard that we found, there are a lot of birds that are sold as the white mallard, but the specific strain that we located, which was a perfect representation of the wild white mallard duck, except it was white. And then when it was compared to the Peking duck, it looked like the Peking duck, except it was smaller. So the fact that it was a white form of the regular mallard, there's no question it's the same species. Just like people have different colored hairs, ducks can have different colored feathers. Mm-hmm. And then just like, there are tall people and short people, you have some birds are bigger, some birds are smaller. So when you put the white mallard in the middle between the Peking duck and the regular mallard duck, it was clear that all three of them were the same species, and just like one was kosher, the other two would also be kosher. And those people that didn't accept the mallard as a bird that they had a tradition for realized that true, they didn't have a tradition on the mallard, but the mallard was the same species as the Peking duck, and just like they were eating the Peking duck, they could also eat the mallard.
Okay, so now there's not that many white mallard ducks around, right?
At the time, the white mallard was, the specific strain that we had was pretty pretty rare, but nothing very special. Unfortunately, the person who was raising them and had a substantial flock of them, she got wiped out during Katrina, and all her flock was just destroyed. And there was another flock that was in New York, and that flock got wiped out during Sandy. So it just turned out by coincidence that I had kept one of the mallards. We had raised a whole bunch of these white mallards to make sure that we understood everything about these birds before we did our study. And I had kept one egg, which I put in an incubator, and it hatched. And that seems to be one of, if not the, surviving remnant of this genetic treasure, which served as a bridge between the Peking duck and the wild mallard.
By the way, do they taste the same, the white and the Peking?
So surprisingly, since we only have one, we decided not to eat it.
Oh, that's a good idea,
Yeah.
That's a very good idea. Yeah. But now, what happens next now? So you have one and then...
So since we started telling people about it, there's one of the people who bred them who got wiped out during Sandy, because we had a whole bunch which we distributed to different people who are interested in raising exotic birds. So they had told me originally that their birds were wiped out, and now they told me just a little while ago that a pair seems to have flown back and come back to the enclosure. So I have to verify if it's really the same two birds that I gave them, but if they have a pair, so there's a little bit of hope that we can preserve it.
Wow. Now what's the gestation period and so on for the white mallard?
I'm pretty sure it's 28 days, but the one that I have, because it was the only egg, for some reason it hatched late. So my numbers might be off.
And now what is this whole story about this painter, Ken Gibson?
Ah, so when this mallard, we thought it was the last of its kind. There had been, he's a painter who likes to use art as a medium to promote wildlife conservation. And he was doing some kind of a Google search and my name came up. And he wanted to know if he could just paint pictures of different birds, which he knew I had access to. You know, when you're painting a bird, you need to see it up close. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the zoos don't have the same birds that we're interested in. And he was interested in painting Philby partridges. And when I told him about the white mallard, the idea that he came up with is this white mallard that I had, it was laying eggs. But of course, since it was there was no other bird that we knew of at the time, all the eggs were obviously there was no baby inside. There was no embryo that was going to develop.
Right.
So when he uses his different paints, he uses egg yolks and egg whites as the base for the colors that he paints with. So the suggestion was to make it, you know, that much more real, he would use the eggs of the white mallard to make the paints with which he would paint the likeness of the white mallard.
Mm-hmm.
And this way it would be sort of, you know, the egg is supposed to preserve the species, and here the egg is preserving the species, but not exactly in the way that nature intended.
Mm-hmm. Wow. It's really, really, really beautiful. Now, how many of these ducks, mallards? Mallards, you only have one.
The white mallard, right.
Right, but how many other, what do you have in your collection?
I don't really have a collection. What I really do is we present a bird to Rabbi Belsky.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, you know, the birds cost $5 or $10, you know, the regular meat market birds. But a lot of times these birds are very, very rare. So to teach as many people as possible, we take the birds, and after they've been presented to Rav Belsky and there's been a psak issued one way or the other, there are a number of people, many of them live in Muncie, some of them live on Long Island, who raise these birds. And whenever anybody else wants to learn about the bird presented, they can go and study these birds. So they're not kept at my house, although, you know, obviously I would like to, but the dimension of the house don't allow for that. The birds are usually available, and when we need them, we go and we get them, and we use them for different OU presentations that we make.
Now, is there any chance we're going to have another Masora dinner, or is that?
That's probably your choice.
Well, you know, I would like to have it. It was really great. I mean, as I said, I went to two of them, and they were fantastic. They were first of all, I mean, just having the Shiurim, one in New York that I attended, one in L.A., I mean, many, many people came. They really enjoyed it tremendously. Okay, something we have to look into. I mean, I think it was really worthwhile. No question about that. So you are really, you know, as I said, you know, you said you became the foremost expert because there weren't too many people, but really, you've really done a good job. And it's so fascinating. Like, you know, we have the Masora, and yet, you know, we're trying to put the links together, and we realize how much we've lost, haven't we?
We really have. And that's what's really, you know, the Masora dinners that we have once in a while. But in Europe, there were communities that would have these Masora dinners on a yearly basis because already before the war, they realized they were losing this knowledge, and they just wanted people to be aware that these birds were kosher. And a lot of the older Rabbanim that we spoke to, the reason that they knew that specific birds we presented them were kosher and were accepted by everyone as kosher were because they had these special dinners in Europe and they remember them from before the war.
Hmm.
So we serve another purpose, that this is going to make sure that the next generation is also going to be able to know that these birds are kosher.
Terrific. Listen, Rabbi Loki, you've done a great job.
Thank you.
First as rabbinic coordinator at the OU, and we really appreciate it. And in preserving an important part of Masorah. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure to have you on my program, okay?
Thank you so much.
Take care. Bye-bye.